We've been too patient. Voices from Radical Mental Health. Stories and research challenging the biomedical model. Edited by L.D. Green and Kelechi Ubozo. Narrated by Dar Brown. Published by North Atlantic Books. This book contains personal stories that include institutional and interpersonal trauma, self-harm, and abuse of all kinds. We believe these stories and contexts are important, and they may be triggering. We encourage you to take care of yourself as you take this book in. Foreword. Robert Whittaker. Robert Whittaker is a science journalist and the author of several books about the history of psychiatry, including Mad in America and Anatomy of an Epidemic. He is also the publisher of the webzine Mad in America. There is a risk, I think, in writing a foreword to an anthology written by those who have been, as the title of this fine anthology cleverly notes, too patient. The problem is that you have been invited to add your voice into the mix, even though what this book calls upon a reader to do is to listen. Indeed, after having finished the book, I was struck mostly with this one thought. From the first page forward, I simply wanted to empty my mind of my own thoughts and quietly listen to the writers tell their personal stories and to their thoughts for creating a new narrative of radical mental health. With that hesitation in mind, I thought I would simply write a bit more about listening to this book, and why I believe, from a societal perspective, that we need to become much better listeners to the voices present in these pages. In the past, we as a society have regularly turned a deaf ear to those deemed mad, and for the most part, that societal deafness continues today. This is one reason why We've Been Too Patient demands that readers, first and foremost, just listen to this group of talented writers. There are many aspects to the act of listening, and my first response with this book was to simply enjoy and often marvel at the use of language in the poems and essays. The writing is direct, clear, and most important of all, authentic. You can easily recognize that the writers are striving, with their choice of words, to be true to their own life stories, and how that authenticity then lends a moral authority to their arguments for radical interventions. The opening poem by Leah Harris, Dear Doctor, immediately put me in the mood to just listen. However, you shouldn't just read this poem to yourself. You need to hear it. And after my first silent reading, I read it out loud. Here is the first stanza. Dear Doctor, on that proud, glorious day, you graduated from medical school. You took an oath as old as Hippocrates, remember? Above all, do no harm. Above all, do no harm. Do no harm. No harm. We see in those first four lines the sight of newly minted doctors, ready to enter a seemingly noble discipline, guided by the moral light of Hippocrates. And then, with the most delicate touch imaginable, Harris drops in the word, remember. That one word propels us forward in time and tells of doctors who, years later, have lost their way. Then the echo of no harm begins to reverberate, a lament that will linger in the reader's mind. The next nine stanzas tell of the author's passage through that medical world of psychiatry, a story of suffering, coldness, and scientific biobabble, all of which tell of harm done. And then comes the moment when the poem turns. We hear of how the author has emerged stronger from that passage, the locked wards of the asylum giving way to an inner world of spiritual freedom, where her voice can begin charting a course of humanity and dignity with scribbles and shouts of my own. After I read the poem aloud a second and then a third time, all I could think was, wow. There are other fine poems in this anthology, and I have to confess that reading them made me wonder why I ever stopped reading poetry on a regular basis. The first half of We've Been Too Patient is composed of poems and essays that tell of personal stories of lived experience. There are several authors who forego telling of the tribulations of being a psychiatric patient and instead jump straight to telling about the paths they took to reach a better place in their lives. A common theme is how important friendships are to mental well-being and how the peer movement helps engender such relationships. Healing spiritual journeys are recounted here too. Several writers do tell of a larger span of their lives, and readers will recognize that their stories often fall into a pattern. Childhood loss or trauma, then entry into a world of diagnosis, psychiatric medications, and hospitalization, and finally, from that darkness, a long struggle to regain autonomy over their own selves. While individual writers may tell of a helpful therapist or of medications that help them today, most tell of a larger system of care, starting with diagnosis, that increased their suffering. When you listen to these personal stories, you are reminded anew that whenever a person trusts you with the larger narrative of his or her life, they are giving you a gift. It is, ultimately, the gift of intimacy. The story that Chris Anastasia tells in Untitled fits the general pattern described above. Childhood loss led to diagnosis, multiple drugs, and hospitalization, and then came a long struggle as an adult to find ways to support my mental well-being. What makes Anastasia's story particularly memorable is that it intersects with the very psychiatrist, Joseph Biederman, who did perhaps more than anyone to create a mental health system that can do such great harm. Beginning in the 1990s, Biederman, with pharmaceutical money flowing into his coffers, played the Pied Piper for recruiting children and adolescents into psychiatry, telling of how so many of them had chronic brain illnesses which needed to be treated on a forever basis with powerful drugs. Anastasia was treated by Biederman from age 12 to 16, and during those 4 years, Anastasia writes that Biederman had me on varying combinations of 16 different medications, including mood stabilizers, anti-anxiety medications, tranquilizers, antidepressants, an anti-epileptic medication that he believed could treat bipolar, antipsychotics, and stimulants to counteract the fatigue I experienced from the other medications. This reads like a diary of assault with a prescription pad. It was also during this time that, at age 12, Anastasia was hospitalized on a psychiatric ward for the first time, where they were strip-searched and left to cry out, "Mom, please don't let them take me." The ward door slammed shut, their mother disappeared, and the wailing of their 12-year-old self can still be heard in these pages today. Anastasia is careful to write that, as an adult, psychiatric medications have been helpful. Yet, at the same time, they raise this haunting question, which I wish all of American society could hear. I don't know what my life would have been like if I hadn't been medicated as a child. One thing I can be sure of is that my brain wasn't allowed to develop as it should have. Anastasia's closing words will remind readers that, when someone tells you their life story, the gift of that telling imposes a responsibility, too. Up until very recently, fear of judgment kept me from sharing my history with others. I wanted to maintain a facade of normalcy and was afraid I would be regarded as too damaged to relate to if I were to divulge my past. I worried that the people I told might tell others and that my story would precede me. I have found, however, that stories of survival of all kinds, are not uncommon, particularly in the queer community. There is strength in our narratives, and I have come to a place where I am willing to tell those who are willing to listen. Which brings us to the essential question. Are we, as a society, willing to listen? Unfortunately, there is plenty of reason to doubt that we will. The past tells of a societal deafness toward those we call
sample complete. Ready to continue?